I don't think I'm going to make it.
This is all I got.
Oh, this weekend has just been unbelievable. I am so filled with love and light and God, and it is just unreal. Hello, my name is Lisa, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is June the 15th, 1993, and for that I'm forever grateful. So I'd like to thank Lee. He called me and he said, you know, we want you to talk on the 12th step. And I thought, you know, I was sitting there, I was thinking, isn't it ironic that I'm talking about sharing the message of AA, and we got Lee over here who gathers the great communicators of Alcoholics Anonymous in these front seats, and he records them and sends it out to the world. Like, he is such a good friend of Alcoholics Anonymous, really. So I want to thank you, Lee. And just thank all the women that have come here. You have just opened my heart this weekend, and I was laying in bed last night, and I'm like, I had a couple people call me, and they're like, how you doing in Atlanta? And I'm like, I am just so blessed that I'm an alcoholic. And they're like, oh boy, she's all filled up, you know. Like, we are so blessed, you know, that we became alcoholic and found this freedom. I mean, I just feel really grateful. And the speakers that came before me, I mean, Tammy was talking about, you know, knowing the difference between her trauma and her alcoholism. Like, I needed to hear that, like, to separate that, because I can get that intertwined, you know. Oh, you don't know what happened to me. And she was really clear about that. It was just very refreshing, right? And Sandy, I think Sandy went home, but I'm really grateful that, you know, you don't have to drink to be crazy. Right? But Sandy said something to the effect of, like, her helping people is just the sunny side of the street of control. And I was like, oh my God, and that's me. And then Georgia saying, I'm an overlapper. I'm like, yeah, me too. I never heard it said like that. I'm an overlapper too, you know? And you also talked about the freedom. You said something to the effect of, like, no matter how you feel, doesn't affect my freedom anymore. I mean, that's really true freedom. Really true freedom. And then Nancy with the song, I've lost 6 pair of eyelashes. I got no eyelashes left. I came with a box of 6. They're all gone. I mean, if I cry anymore, I was doing this. I'm like, oh my God, there goes enough. Oh, dear Lord, dear Lord. So it's just been, and then April, I don't know if anybody knows, April does a whole, her own convention, her own conference every year down in South Florida, Chapters of Recovery. She's such a good friend of Alcoholics Anonymous and people that show up. And I'm just really glad that I'm here, and that I feel like I'm standing on the shoulders of giants with Mari and Deborah. How about Deborah with Pick Your Hard? Pick Your Hard. And the myth of over there. Oh, I suffered from that for so long. The myth of, if I'm just over there, I'll be happy. If I'm just here, I'll be happy. I've never heard Pick Your Heart. Like, these are the things that I have learned this weekend from these beautiful ladies, you know. And of course, my higher power has a new name. His new name is Harold Yabba Dabba Doo. I got a new Harold. Oh, Harold Yabba Dabba Doo. He's my guy. Yep, he's my guy. So I want to thank the ladies for helping me to, like, expand my heart and give me a new experience with the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm here to talk about step 12 and having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. We carry the message to alcoholics, and we practice these principles in all of our affairs, or to the best of our ability. And I'm just going to give you a little bit about what it was like and how people were able to 12-step me and give me some hope in this program. So I don't have time to tell my story, but I'm just going to tell you about a year before I stopped drinking. And I was a total mess, just like you ladies, and I'm here just because we drank too much and we partied too much, and I was in many hospital stays and many accidents, and the left side of my body was broken, and I was a mess. And at the end of my drinking, there was this bar. It was called the City Line Bar, and it was right where the 66 bus meets Frankfurt Avenue in Philadelphia. And I was slumped up against that. You know the bars that we start out in and then the bars we land up in. Not so good. So I was slumped up at the City Line Bar, you know, the bars on the window, that kind of thing. And there was a man, his name was Joe Brown, and he was Joe B., but he has passed on, so I can say his last name. And Joe was he was such a kind man. He had many, many decades of sobriety at the time. I didn't even know about sobriety at this point. He owned a Philadelphia Inquirer stand. I think you can tell I'm not from Georgia. I'm from Philadelphia originally. And he owned a Philadelphia Inquirer stand. And he bought that particular stand, I found out later, is because within 20 feet was the City Line Bar. So he got to 12-step people while he sold newspapers. So there I was, slumped up against the City Line Bar, waiting for it to open because it was the only bar in the city that opened at 5 a.m. And I was, And I was slumped over at like 4, waiting, just praying for that hour. And so anyway, here comes Joe. And I'm slumped up, and my stockings are ripped. I got 3 nails, my hair's. And he comes out and he says to me, "Hey, how you doing? My name's Joe." And I clearly thought, oh, he wants me. You know how we think that, right? We're out for 3 days and we're like, I'm gorgeous. So I was slumped up against this bar, and I was afraid of him. I got afraid. And he said, I just want to talk to you, just say hello to you. I just want to make friends with you. And I was like, oh, this guy, I got to get out of here. And at this point of my drinking, I had lost everything. I had lost my job. I was no longer employable. I was at the point now where I was staying at friend's house, but I was doing the couch surfing thing. And you know how you get to the couch surfing thing and then the husband of your girlfriend like gives you the look like you gotta go. You remember that look like, oh no, you gotta go. And I was getting that look, so I was doing the couch surfing thing for a while. So I had left when I had met this Joe, and I'd left and I went to my girlfriend Barb's house and I was there for about 3 weeks. But my drinking got to be so bad that I landed up like homeless. Now, I was only like homeless for a month, but in my mind, I was a gypsy soul, just like Stevie Nicks. I was in the crick. I was living in the crick and in the woods. And I was, this is in my mind that I was like washing my hair with all the natural minerals of the quick, and that like I was like, Stevie Nicks. And I was homeless, but I could not admit that to myself. So I had this brilliant idea of, I'm from Philadelphia, and I have 4 older brothers and a dad, so I was raised by 5 men. I'm the only female and the youngest. So they taught me all kinds of things. They taught me how to rig cars and break into windows and all kinds of boy things. So I was able to, when I was living in this crick area, in Philadelphia, there's a lot of row homes. And in the row homes, there's like these sliding glass doors. And if you were really good, you could jimmy the sliding glass doors and then you could get in. So I would wait for the families to leave and go to work. And then I would come out at correct around 8 o'clock in the morning and I'd jimmy the sliding glass doors and I would go in and I would, you know, put on the Days of Our Lives and take a shower, make a bologna and cheese sandwich and just thought I was Einstein. I thought this was the most brilliant idea and they always had booze in the basement. I would go down, I'd have a drink and blah, blah, blah. And I would sleep. And I felt, you know, very courteous as I would make the bed after I was done sleeping. I was courteous like that. And then I would leave. And this was going on for about, I don't know, about 3 weeks. And when I tell you that I was drunk nonstop for the past 3 years of my drinking, I was drunk nonstop. So one day I get out of the woods and I'm waiting for a family to leave. And I'm like this by the bushes, and I'm scoping it out, and I look to my right, and I see all these guys with white styrofoam cups. And I'm like, who are those weirdos? You know, I'm in the woods calling them weirdos. And as I'm looking, I see someone turn their head, and they spot me. And I'm like, oh, no. Oh, my God, they're coming to get me. And I see this gentleman look. And then I see him start walking down the grassy knoll, and I'm like, oh, here we go. And they're, you know, the hedges go back up, and I'm scared and afraid. But I'm from Philly, so I'm scared and afraid, but I'm ready to fight. So he comes down, and he goes, hey, how you doing? Do you remember me? And I go, I don't know. He goes, listen, I just want to ask you something. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, are you hungry? Now he caught my attention. I was like, yeah, I'm hungry. He says, we have coffee and donuts and some of these little finger sandwiches up there. You want some fingers? I was like, yeah, I want some finger sandwiches. Of course I want some coffee and donuts. And he said, you don't remember me. Do you remember the Inquirer stand? And I was like, no, I didn't remember any of this. And he reached down and he pulled me through those hedges. And when anyone, anywhere, reaches out for the hand of AA, we are responsible. And he took me out of that muck and mire. And it must have rained the night before because I remember the grass being very wet. And some of you ladies remember candies. You remember candies, the high heels? Uh-huh. I used to run from the cops in them. And I'm walking up the grassy knoll. And I remember my heels going like, shh, shh, in the mud. And I remember him looking down and saying, oh, your heels are lovely. I was in high heels in the woods. Just thought I'd let you know. And I remember thinking, oh, he likes my heels. He likes my heels. And so what I'm really trying to get at is that the grace of the old timers. He didn't come up to me and say to me, oh, you're drinking and, you know, you're a loser or whatever. Okay, what he said was, would you like some donuts and coffee? And, like, he absolutely knew what to say to me. There was no shame. There was no pointing fingers. There was just love and compassion. Love and tolerance is our code. Now, he took me up. Now, I didn't know this, but I thought I was going to one of these VFW lodge meetings with the hats, the tassels. I had no idea where I was. I was drunk. I was still hungover. And he sits me down. We go into the meeting place. It was the reality group on Roosevelt Boulevard in Philly. And he sits me down. And I remember sitting down, and he must have been sponsoring the guy next to me, and he says, listen, could you get her a cup of coffee, blah, blah, blah. So the guy gets up, and he goes over to the coffee bar to get me a cup of coffee, and I say across the room, could you pop that in the microwave? I like two creams and two sugars, blah, blah, blah. And the reason I tell that story is because the arrogance of the alcoholic, right? Like, I just got pulled out of the woods 2 minutes ago, and I'm telling this guy how I like my coffee, and hurry up, and let's get it going on. And, I mean, we're like this. I'm like this. So, anyway, he came back, and Joe gave me the coffee, and these two men that were sitting next to me, they get up. Two women sit down. I'm like, what happened? Where'd they go? They were like younger and cuter. And I was like, and she's like, hi, my name's Mary. And I'm like, oh, Christ, Mary. And they're like, hello, hello, hello. And I was like, oh, God. They said, listen, and they were talking to me. And they said, just stay with us. And now, back in the day, 30 years ago, they said to me, do you have a place to live? I said, no, I was in the woods. And they said, well, they used to call it sitting on someone. And they would take you just for like a couple of days. Like, they wouldn't invite you in their home, but they would let you stay there for like 2 days. And then Mary passed me on to, I don't even remember their names, Amy. And then Amy passed me on to Amanda. And Amanda passed me on to this one and that one. And that's how I got sober. I did 3 weeks of that. And then finally I was like, oh my God, like I don't have 3 weeks sober. So I didn't have treatment or anything. Like I was struck sober. When I was in that woods, I had absolutely no intention of getting sober. I didn't even have the desire. And then somebody 12-stepped me with a donut and a cup of coffee. That's all it took. That's all the kindness that it took. And he saved my life. Like, I will never be able to repay him. I will never be able to pay Alcoholics Anonymous. So, and then these women, they took me here, they took me there, and they would say things like, they would say, okay, we're going to pick you up at 12 o'clock. You know, be ready. And I'd be like, well, where we're going? Don't worry about it. I'm like, what? You're going to get pizza. No, all right. Okay. All right. Then we're driving down 95, and I would see the signs of Atlantic City. I would like, where are we going? Where, you know, 48 hours later, I'm like, you know, with AA meetings. They didn't tell me. I call my AA kidnappers. Like did it? They just said, get in the car, get in the car, get in the car, get in the car. And they would lie to me, straight up lie to me. Where are we going? For ice cream. Then I'd be at a meeting, and I'm like, what happened to the ice cream? Like, I thought I was getting a sundae. Like, they're like, oh, you are. You are, you are, you are. After the meeting. Oh, dear Lord. This is how I got sober. Just kindness of strangers. I mean, they treated me with respect. I didn't have any respect for myself, and these people were treating me with love and kindness, tolerance, and respect. This is the 12th step. And how it was shared, how it got me sober, and how do I practice these principles in all my affairs? Now that I'm sober, how do I transmit that in my life? So I have to remember about the newcomer at all times. I mean, so I'm getting sober now, and I have a sponsor. Her name's Kathy H. And God love her. She was my sponsor for first 4 or 5 years. And I would constantly say, why? 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 Why don't we have to? Why? Why? And she would say to me, XYZ, XYZ. And I was the why girl. You got to do it like this. Well, why? Well, why? And she'd say, you're either going to do it or you're not going to do it, Lisa. So when I got sober, I thought to myself, well, I know what I need. First of all, I need a gym membership. I need to dye my hair, get a cut, and then I got to start, exercising. And then, I got to get some new clothes. I got to get a job. I got to do all these things. Now, my sponsor was like, yeah, I know you got to do all those things, but you need to look at the book of AA, and we need to get down to brass tacks here. We need to start writing it. And I was like, yeah, I know. How many times do you hear that from your sponsees? I know. And you're like, no, you don't. No, you do not. But you know, like Mari said, we got to pause. So now I'm looking good, I'm smelling good, and I'm acting like Miss America every time I go into a meeting. I'm like, do you remember these girls? Okay, my boobs are like this. And I got the Betty Boop shorts on. And I'm tan. Oh, I'm tan. I look like a piece of leather. I'm so tan. And I'm walking into the meetings and I'm doing the Miss America wave and it's all about my outsides. And Kathy, God love her. She just didn't say much about this. She just kept on pushing me to the book. And one time I got invited to a pool party. I had about 2.5 years sober. Now, keep in mind, I did my steps, but I did them like, okay, what did they want me to do? Because I really wasn't too invested at that time. I was invested in me. I know you're shocked. So I get invited to this pool party, and I'm at this pool party, and it took me 3 hours to get ready for a pool party. I even curled my hair. I mean, I look back on this now, I'm like, oh, my God. It's just embarrassing. Curled my hair, and I had the shorts on. I get invited to this pool party, and I'm not 5 minutes into this pool party, and this one of our AA members looks at me, and he says, oh, look at how much. Now, I'm from Philadelphia, right? And I got four brothers. My instinct, I just leaped right over a picnic bench and started fist fighting a man. Now I'm 2.5 years sober and I'm wham, wham, and people are like, what is wrong with her? And I got back in my car and I'm sitting in my car and I am just sobbing and sobbing. I go home, I call Kathy, and this is when the phones were, you had a cord on the phone, and I'm on the phone and I'm like, Kathy, you're not going to believe what he said to me. And she said, Lisa, do me a favor. I want you to go into the bathroom. Do you have a long mirror? And of course I had 16 mirrors. And she said, I want you to go into the bathroom and take a look at yourself. I'm like, what has this got to do with, what are you talking about? And she said, just do it. So I remember pulling my cord all the way and I'm looking and I said, yeah, I'm here. Guru. I'm looking. And she said to me, we love you for exactly who you are. You don't have to look or act like that anymore. That was it. I fell to the floor. Because everything was about my outsides. You know, how I looked, how I presented, how my hair was, you know, how tan I was. And I surrendered again at that moment. See, it talks about having had a spiritual awakening. I haven't stopped having spiritual awakenings. See, when God is ready to show you, you have another one and another one and another one. And this was, I fell to my knees and I thought, oh my God. And I said, I don't know how to stop being this way. And she said, that's okay. We're going to love you right into it. And she said, and I want you to consider picking up that paper and that pen. And again, let's do your fourth step again. And at that time, I was ready because I was just in so much pain. I was just in so much pain and I was closer to drinking than I knew. See, we don't know that we're close to drinking when we're close to drinking. alcoholism, in my particular opinion, is the illness of perception with delusion and illusion. Do you know in the big book, there's not one time that it says the word denial? No, no, no. It's delusion and illusion. That's what Bill writes. Because we are way past denial. When I am believing my own nonsense, you can hook me up to a lie detector machine and I'm passing with flying colors because they're always out to get me. And I am believing that. You know I have an issue. I have a mental illness that tells me that I don't. It also tells me that it's always your problem or you're at fault. That it can't be me. So anyway, I started to do the steps again with Kathy. And even though I had that awakening, I still was challenged with it, you know, year four, year five. And, although I redid my steps, but in the middle of this, I was like, you know what I need? I need money. That's what I need, Anita. I need a whole boatload of money. So how can I do that? So I decided to open up my own business and blah, 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 blah. And I was success. You know, we're successful at anything we want to be. We're like a dog with a bone. Tell us we can't do something, forget about it. So I decided that I was, you know, going to open up this jewelry store on Jewelers Row. And I did all that. And, you know, I had this great inventory and, you know, the whole nine yards. And that after I got that established, I was like, you know, ain't working anymore. So I'll get married. Because that seems to work. Fill that void for a minute. And that's what I did. I just married this guy. I was like, okay, we're going to get married now. And he was another AA member. He's like, all right, we'll get married. And that didn't work out so well. And, you know, I had everything, it was all about the outside. But when I tell you that I didn't know this, even though my sponsors were directly saying to my face, in my eyeballs, Lisa, you're working on your outsides. And I was like, yeah, pleasure to meet you as well. Like, I did not have the ears on the side of my head to actually hear this. I was just like, Mari said, and just must be jealous. What other explanation is there? That's what I thought. And I just kept marching on and marching on. And about 8 years sober, I'm 8 years sober. Now, if you look at me on the outside, you know, I got the Joan and David shoes and I'm wearing the Gucci this and the blah, blah, blah. And I'm living in Philadelphia and I'm getting my house. I'm getting a custom made house in New Jersey and, you know, my carpets and my cabinets are and I'm doing all that. Okay. And I'm married, which is disintegrating. So I'm thinking about a boyfriend. Okay. Just in case, because I'm an overlapper. So, because I can't get out of one and I can't be alone. Mm-mm. So I go to this meeting and I'm driving over the Benjamin Franklin Bridge and I hear this woman, oh, you know, Sally B's getting her 25 Sally B's, you know, and I'm not impressed with anyone except me because I'm arrogant, really arrogant. I don't know I'm arrogant. I think I'm a Girl Scout because I have all these women that I'm sponsoring. I'm taking them through the book and I'm completely delusional in my own nonsense and have no idea. So I go over to meet these girls. I'm driving over the Benjamin Franklin Bridge and I start thinking, how can I get the airbag out of this car? I just bought a brand new Lexus. I'm like, how can I get the airbag out of this car? And then I would think to myself, why am I thinking like that? Like, that's odd. And if anybody knows anything about, like, suicidal ideations, it just comes on you. Like, I was thinking about suicide. But my illness sort of, it was like here. It was like over here. Like, and every time I turned, it turned with me. Like, I could not see it like this. So I go to this thing with Sally, and I thought, well, maybe I can talk to her after the meeting. So I go up to her, and I said, you know, hi, my name is Lisa. You know, can I talk? She said, sure. So we go outside, and I said, now, listen, what I'm about to tell you, she said, stop right there. I said, no, but it could ruin my marriage. She said, now, really stop right there. She said, I know you. And I thought, of course she does. And she says, yeah, I have names for women like you. She goes, I call you the busy, because you're busy off doing this and busy going back to school and busy, 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 making money and getting married and busy shopping and busy, busy, busy. And every time, once in a while, you fit a meeting in and you go, you know, you do some book work with a couple girls, but then you go right back into your life because you're busy. Because AA gave you a life, and it's almost like you're saying to God, you know, thank you for all these beautiful gifts. I'll take it from here now. I don't need you anymore. You're placing me into a place where I don't need all this, like, AA stuff. I just dip my little toe in and out, and I act accordingly, but my heart is somewhere else. Guess where my heart is? With me and my money and my fun and my this and my that. But, see, I don't know this. I think, listen, I was in the woods. I'm getting stuff back. Like, I'm going to get my life back. I'm going to get married. I'm going to have the American dream. I'm going to blah, 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 blah. I'm going to. And I just thought that that was the right thing to do. And there is something to be said about that. But our primary purpose is to stay sober and help another alcoholic out of that muck and mire. There is no other way for us. See, I got to be busy with other things, like people and my program and my girls. That's what I need to be busy with. And there was an element. I knew that she was right. I knew. And I said, I don't know how to stop. And she said, well, come to my house, you know, tomorrow at 12 o'clock and blah, blah, blah. So I go over her house the next day. And she takes a makeup mirror from out of her bathroom and she puts it in front of me and she said to me, you no longer have a drinking problem, but my oh my, you have a you problem and you have a God problem. I go, oh, I believe in God. She's like, mm-hmm. She's like, I'm going to take you through the book again. Now, this is the third time I'm going through the book. So I want to say to anyone who's out there that if you're in the middle of the book and you're like, I don't understand this, just keep going through the book. Just keep going. Just keep moving forward. Because I'm sure that there's not one of us in this room that has done this perfectly, done it right, done it without mistakes. We just keep going and we don't drink. That's the secret. And so she said, listen, your time is going to be Tuesday night between 6:30 and 7:30. And I was like, oh, okay. She goes, no, I don't want you to say yes now. I want you to, like, give it 3 days. Because, quite honestly, there's women behind you that would kill to get into this book. You're allowed one absent. You're allowed... It's a 4-month commitment, and you're allowed to call out one time. So it's just people that are dying, Lisa. They're dying. You got women that are dying. So if you're not serious about going through this with me, then, you know, next, I can't help you. And I was like, God, she's rude. My God. Holy moly. I was like, oh, okay, I'll think about it. Mm-hmm. And I left, and I thought, wow, like I knew that she was seeing something within me that I couldn't see, and that I was very, very close. Because 2 days prior, or a day prior, I'm thinking about trying to get an airbag out of my car, at 8 years sober, thinking about, I'm married, but I'm thinking about getting a boyfriend. You know, I'm not So there's just a couple things that I want to just share with you about the 12th step. On page 14 and 15 in our big book, it says, my friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. And particularly it was imperative to work with others as he had worked with me, because faith without works is dead. And how appallingly true for the alcoholic, for if the alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. And if he did not work, he would surely drink and die. That's us. I mean, that's me. I can't rest on my laurels. Matter of fact, God in his infinite wisdom set it up that when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I needed AA, I couldn't get enough, and I couldn't get enough. And then the longer I stay in, the more my ego finds more cunning and baffling ways that I even need AA even more. It's crazy how it works. You think you got it down. Oh, no. The longer you're here, the more that you realize how sick you were or how sick you are. Thank God God doesn't reveal it all at once. Shh, don't tell the newcomer. But that's really what, you know, like I have to enlarge my spiritual life. Our problems is relations with other people. That's our main problem. Our demand, this is in the 12 and 12. Do you know the 12 and 12 is 21 pages long? It's longer than the 4 step. Our demand for emotional and financial security threw us into unworkable relations with others. That was me, my honey and my money. My romance and my finance. See, God could have everything else, but he couldn't have that. That was just way too important to me. To me, working with others was really important, because just like being at this conference, like, and just talking to old comers, newcomers, people that I haven't met, my heart just expands and it just, my ego like goes in the back a little bit and my God consciousness comes forward. And my ego is not my amigo. My ego always tells me I'm right and that everybody else is an idiot and they need to listen to me. That's my ego. And my God consciousness is like, pause, listen. Like Mari said about eyeball to eyeball. When someone's talking to you, instead of looking over here to see who else I could talk to, eyeball to eyeball. And also the women that I sponsor, shoulder to shoulder. There is no man up, man down. We are all the same. All the same. There's no I'm the sponsor and you're the sponsee. No, it doesn't work like that. We do this together. That's how it's done. The love of another woman is what, well, at first it was the man, but then it was when I met Sally, she was my sponsor for 15 years and before she passed on, and she would hug me and slap me at the same time. She would hug me and she would whisper in my ear, I am screaming out loud right now. And then I knew I was in trouble. That's how I know I am screaming out loud. She was such a beautiful, beautiful woman. And she pulled me through so many things. I knew that I could trust her with my life and my secrets and my everything. She was an unbelievable woman. Also in the 12 and 12, it says, sometimes very unconscious, the results were always the same. We either dominated those about us or we depended on them way too much. Either way, we blamed them and then we ran away. See, if I couldn't control you or get something from you, you were of no use to me. So I had to learn to spot my own stuff. I had to learn. And then I had to learn how to practice those principles in all of my affairs. Not just in the hour that I was in AA, you know, talking to my girls or talking to other women. I had to practice it at work. I had to practice it with my mother. Oh my God, she saved my life today. But I needed to hear Georgia. I have a 90-year-old mother, and like the eye rolling will stop when I, you know, just you really made a difference. I really needed to hear that talk. Because if I can't practice it with my own mom, really, what the hell am I doing here? Just looking good and sounding good. Like, it needs to be done in work. It needs to be done with my family members. It needs to be done with my aggravating neighbor. I got one of those. Yeah. So I have to do it in all my affairs. And I do it to the best of my ability. And I stop beating myself up. Because that's no good either. Like, I stopped saying, I said, okay, all right, you'll do it better next time. You just keep forging ahead. You keep trying. You keep going through the book. You keep doing the best that you can do. And then the old saying, more will be revealed. More will be revealed about you and about them. How am I doing on time? I don't even know. Okay. Somebody please tell me. Okay. Okay. So, I had to, decide that I could no longer do the things in Alcoholics Anonymous sober that I was doing drunk, because I got to tell you that when I came in, I didn't have treatment or therapy or any of that kind of stuff. So I just came. I was a bar fly before I was homeless. And I went from the bar stool right into the AA chair, and it was acting the same way. And really, I didn't see it. And then I dressed up the outside so you wouldn't suspect that I was doing the same stuff. But I was doing the same stuff. And one of my biggest fears was walking alone in this program. So I had husbands and boyfriends and boyfriends. I think I was engaged like 4 times in my first 4 years or something. They used to call me the ring collector. I mean, it was really, I was out of my mind. And I couldn't walk alone. I just could not walk alone. It was way, way too scary for me. And when I met Sally, she said to me, you are going to either do this now or you are going to do it later. But in the end, my friend, you will do it. You can either do it when you're 35 or when you're 65, but it needs to be accomplished because you don't know the freedom. You don't know freedom until that's accomplished. Because if I'm always reliant on you and your behaviors and what you think of me and what you, I will never have my own autonomy. I will never know the line in the sand of what is yours and what is mine. And then being in on this side, actually be able to help you and understand and love you when you're not acting right. See, I could never love anybody if they weren't acting right. I had to tell them that they weren't acting right. But when you learn your own autonomy, when you learn to walk alone and you lose that fear because you have God walking with you and you find somebody and meet someone, then you're able to be with them in a relationship, not a tick. I loved it. I was a tick. I was an overlapper and a tick. That was probably one of the biggest freedoms that I ever had. I stayed alone for about 3 years. No boyfriends, no booty calls, no texting, none of that stuff. Well, we didn't have texting back then. So then I married somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was a wonderful, beautiful relationship. Now, in between, I had brothers that died and overdosed. My father died of cancer. I had a brother die at 4 years, drank himself to death. He regurgitated on his own vomit, and they found him. He left 2 children behind. Then I had a father that died. And then at 9 years sober, I had another brother who died from alcoholism. And then my sponsor, Sally, died. And then I had my cat of 18 years die. So I was going through stuff. But I'm here to tell you that you can stay sober no matter what. Death, divorce, anything. I'm just going to tell you one more little 12-step story. Is that when I had 4 years sober, my brother Danny died. Amanda, keep time for me. Just let me know. Okay, when my brother Danny died at 4 years sober, when I tell you my whole world bottomed out, I've never experienced grief like that. Never. Okay? And I'm laying on the couch and I'm thinking about suicide. Somebody talked about suicide. Oh, Mari did. And I thought about suicide a lot. So I called my girlfriend Carolyn and I was like, Carolyn, I just can't, you know, I just want to die. I just want to commit suicide. She's like, oh, Lise, we all think about suicide. Just don't pay attention to it. And I remember thinking, what? Just don't pay attention. What? Oh, yeah, that happens to all of us. And I believed her. I was like, oh, all right, I will pay attention to it. I mean, so they came over, and I was living with my brother Danny at the time. So I was in the apartment that we were in, and it was just me now. My girlfriends came over, and little did I know that I couldn't even bathe myself. It was bad. I mean, I just bottomed out. This is what took me out of it. Is that they put took a loose leaf paper and they put a magnet on the fridge and there was like 4 of them and they made like these little scrappy squares and Carolyn put her name in and then she put like a time, like I can be here from like 6 to 9. Now I didn't know they did this. I remember going to the refrigerator and looking on this paper like, what the hell is this? They made up times of when they could sort of just like babysit me for the next couple of weeks. That's not in the book. Someone here talked about, if you think like the men in here are good looking, get a couple AA girlfriends, because that is the most, they will save your life. I remember standing in the shower and 2 AA women like this, and they were just like, we'll wash your hair. And I was like, all right, wash my hair. And I got better. They would drag me to meetings. Put your hand up, Lisa. Talk about your pain. Put your hand up. And that somehow, with God's grace, you know, I got through that. Sponsoring, I had 18 years sober. I met this woman, she had 9 months sober, and her name was Kat. And she started seeing a married man who had 2 children, and this man was in treatment. And he used to, every Tuesday and Thursday, his job was like to take these guys to a meeting, and then he'd be back. So we would drop off, he'd go over Kat's house. He would have relations with Kat. Then he would, this happened every Tuesday and every Thursday for months and months and months. Only for 3 hours he used this woman, my sponsee. And he had 2 kids at home. And I couldn't take not one more hearing about this guy. Oh, and I love him. And I was like, oh my God. So, I said, that's it, I can't. And I took her out for lunch, and I said, listen, I can't sponsor you anymore. Like, you're not looking to do the AA program. You're not looking to be honest. You're not this, that, and the third, and blah, blah, blah. And about 3 months later, she went out and she drank. And I remember thinking, like, I'm not responsible for her drinking, and, you know, she made that choice and blah, blah, blah. So about 2 years later, okay, big long story, I can't get into it, but I'm dating again. That marriage didn't work out because he picked up the drink and I had to make a choice. And so now I'm dating again, and I meet this gentleman, and he lives in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, but he has a business in Florida. So he's doing the back and forth, and I'm really liking this guy. And he's doing the back and forth and back and forth, and then finally I find out he's married. And I say to my sponsor, I call him up, and I'm like, but he told, this is what I say, and I'm 22 years sober. And I say, listen, he's getting a divorce. 22 years sober. He's getting a divorce. He told me he's getting a divorce. And she just said to me, are you out of your mind? Like, you already know the answers. I don't even, why, like, what are you, hello? And then I remembered Kathy, who went 9 months sober. Not 22 years, 9 months sober. And at 22 years, there was a little piece of me that wanted to wiggle over into the camp of the married thing. Imagine what a girl with 9 months, she had nothing. She had nothing. She had me at AA, and I let her down. And instead of being with love and tolerance, I said, I can't sponsor you anymore because you're not doing it my way. The biggest regret of my life, of my sponsorship life. And then you got to be careful what you judge here in AA, ladies, because God will definitely put that same situation in your life and then see how you're going to deal with it. I promptly made an amends. She got back into AA and got another sponsor, and I don't blame her. And I promptly made an amends to her, and I told her that I was so sorry. But what a lesson it was for me, 22 years sober. Like, who do you think you are in your arrogance? God will smash your ego exactly where it needs to be smashed at the time that it needs to be smashed. So there were so many good things that I learned about the 12th step and how people 12th step me, and then how I shared what I learned. But I never did this thing perfectly, and I didn't do it without mistakes. And I certainly was not like Miss AA. I fought a lot of things tooth and nail, but one thing I did not do is I did not pick up that first fatal drink. With God's grace, I can say that. Okay. I just want to, I don't know where my phone is. Oh, there it is. I just want to finish up with a quick little thing here. Okay. Imagine yourself as a living house. God comes in to rebuild that house. And at first, perhaps, you can understand what he's doing. He's getting the drains right, and he's stopping the leaks in the roof and so on. And you knew that those jobs needed doing. And so you are not surprised. But presently, he started knocking the house about in a way that hurts abdominally and does not seem to make any sense to you. What on earth is he up to? The explanation is that he is building quite a different house from the one you thought of. Throwing out the new wing here, putting on an extra floor there, running up towers, making courtyards. You thought you were being made into a decent little cottage. But he is building a palace. He intends to come and live in it with you himself. And our house is our own vessel. My name is Lisa Lowen. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you so much.